Discourse on Unlike Any Other Government by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Explaining where we came from, what happened along the way, and what we need to do to get back to where we belong. Episode number 1, Tumultuous Beginnings. Preface. If you willingly accept that we are currently governed by a government established under and by the authority of the Constitution, you may wish to stop reading now. The intention of what follows is to bring to light only some of the many misdeeds of government. It is also intended to help the reader to understand what thought process the Founding Fathers used when they created a government unlike any other government ever before seen on Earth. The Constitution was written as a set of guidelines for the operation of the government. As Thomas Jefferson said, "Let the Constitution be the chains that bind the government." We will explore where government has gone astray by violating that very document which created it, and in violation of that sacred oath that they took on assuming their office of public trust. We will also enter into the realm of administrative agencies, perhaps even more destructive of our liberty and freedom than the violations of the Constitution. When I was young, I recall that many political cartoons in Life Look and Saturday Evening Post magazines. There were some that ridiculed the Soviet Union regarding its bureaucracy and hero worship. A cartoon might show a long line of people standing before an administrative building. A passerby asked the woman at the end of the line, "What are you standing in line for?" To which the lady responds, "I don't know, but with this many people in line, it must be something I need." We now find ourselves standing in line. We know not what for, more often than ever before, waiting for something to happen that will improve our condition. The Soviets were very prompt to create heroes out of the multitude of government personnel. In honoring Hero for his work, the citation might read, "For rescuing a dead cat from a fallen tree." The idea, quite simply, was to establish in the people the fact that all government employees are, somehow, superior because they just do their jobs. Those jobs which they applied for and were given, knowing that the everyday duties of those jobs included such risks that are now rewarded by both government and the press with accolades of hero. If non-government person is the recipient of such an award, it is most often a woman or a child. Firefighters who, 50 years ago, entered burning homes and brought family members and dogs out alive received only a paycheck on Friday. Today we have entered that realm of hero worship. This happened during the period of the McCarthy hearings of the 1950s. Every effort was made to expose those who wanted to destroy the fabric of the self-governed nation and replace it with communistic, share the wealth, equality for all, to each based upon his needs, from each based upon his abilities. Perhaps it was a form of eugenics to try to expel those who would tear down what the Founding Fathers sacrificed so much for to build. If so, it is one that I can agree with. People who come to this country with the intention of ignoring or even eliminating its culture, heritage, and way of government do not belong here. They are, at best, misguided into thinking that what was earned so dearly will be abandoned so lightly. This is America. This nation used to be a beacon to the world. The government, by submitting to whatever evils which have swayed them from what was intended, have betrayed the people of this great nation. The Founding Fathers, in their foresight, have left us instructions on how to right that wrong. It is our obligation, it is our duty, to return to and preserve the United States of America. Our tumultuous beginnings, the first American tyranny. Shortly after the close of the French and Indian Wars, from 1754 to 1763, the British, in order to pay the cost of the just-ended war, decided to impose a tax on the colonies. The Parliament enacted a tax law that was only for the North American colonies and did not even attempt to discuss the taxes with the lawful government, that's the colonial governments. Instead, without regard for the laws of England and the rights of Englishmen, bypass the established method of taxation. Various efforts by the colonists to gain a voice and be heard occurred between 1765 with the Stamp Act and 1773, the Tea Act, and although effective to some degree, never did achieve the desired goal of representation. On April 19, 1775, Captain John Parker, commander of the militia in Lexington, Massachusetts, lined up 40 to 70 Minutemen on the Lexington Green. Standing ready, they faced a few hundred of the British under the direct command of Major Pitcairn. Pitcairn ordered the Minutemen to put down their arms and disperse. As some of the Minutemen began to move away, a shot was fired. Moments later, 8 colonists lay dead on the green. According to John Adams, this was the end of the Revolution and the beginning of the War for Independence. During those early years, a revolution was taking place in America. As John Adams said in a letter to Thomas Jefferson, dated August 24, 1815, and in response to a question by Jefferson, said, "As to the history of the Revolution, my ideas may be peculiar, perhaps singular. What do we mean by revolution? The war? That was no part of the Revolution. It was only an effect and a consequence of it. The Revolution was in the minds of the people, and this was effected from 1760 to 1775, in the course of 15 years, before a drop of blood was drawn at Lexington. The records of the 13 legislatures, the pamphlets, newspapers in all the colonies, ought to be consulted during that period to ascertain the steps by which the public opinion was enlightened and informed concerning the authority of Parliament over the colonies." Perhaps Mr. Adams was correct in that the Revolution was the change of ideas rather than the war itself. The acts of tyranny transcend the mere concerns over taxes. Governors were removed and replaced with royal appointees, assemblies were suspended, writs of assistance were issued without judicial scrutiny, accused individuals were transported to England for trial, soldiers were quartered in homes and private property ransacked, guns, cannonball, and powder were seized, and the right of Englishmen were trampled into the dust. During the course of these events, the colonists did not stand idle. Sons of Liberty organizations sprang up through most of the colonies. Sons of Liberty, most often, took their orders from the Committees of Safety, an English tradition dating back to the 17th century in the colonies, which were rapidly establishing themselves throughout the colonies. Committees of Safety and the Militia. Prior to the War for Independence, Committees of Safety were being organized throughout the colonies. Committees, an English tradition and rite, made their appearance in the colonies in the 17th century. In 1692, a Committee of Safety jailed and expelled a royal governor, Governor Andros, of New England. Prior to the Revolution, committees formed their militia primarily to protect from Indian attacks and provide night watchmen to give alarm in emergencies such as fire or raids. As the events that led to the war continued, committees made a return in every colony so that local government could deal with local problems regardless of the ability or inability of the Crown's government to deal with necessary functions. In 1774, committees appointed delegates to the First Continental Congress, the Stamp Act Congress. Militia were, by custom, subordinate to the royal government, should he call for them. Otherwise, they were subordinate to the Committee of Safety. The condition of subordination of the militia to the civil authority has roots back to the Magna Carta in 1215. The relationship would serve through a lesser degree as time went by through the war and would provide the foundation for subsequent Articles of Confederation and the state constitutions. What way to go? Though John Adams perceived the Revolution to be over by April 19, 1775, others were less inclined to separate from the Crown. Though some violence had preceded the events at Lexington and Concord, it had been isolated events, seldom with significant loss of life. From that day forward, the violence escalated drastically. Fort Ticonderoga, Bunker Hill, 96, South Carolina, Montreal, Canada, Norfolk, Virginia, Great Canebrake, South Carolina, Quebec City, Canada, Moores Creek Bridge, North Carolina, Providence Island in the Bahamas, Three Rivers in Canada, Sullivan's Island in South Carolina, Fort Moultrie in South Carolina, and hundreds of lesser contests between Loyalists and Patriots throughout the colonies. All of these fought with the intention of convincing the Crown that the rights of Englishmen belonged to the colonists and seeking that recognition from Parliament. All of these battles fought to demonstrate the sincerity of the colonists with their demand for change. Thousands of lives lost while committed only to a resolution of the grievances that had been repeatedly sent to the government to be addressed. Constant prayer that resolution would be found and arms set aside, returning to the warm arms of Mother England. Though there were few colonists who believed that there was no recourse but to separate forever from English rule, it wasn't until nearly 15 months after the beginning of the war that the colonial government realized that too much had occurred to ever believe that reconciliation could ever be achieved. Declaration of Independence. On July 4, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was formally signed. This magnificent document provides an insight into the thinking of the Founding Fathers. For example, it provides their explanation of the purpose of government, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Those rights therein mentioned are enumerated as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Clearly, they have provided us an understanding the government was instituted to serve the interests of the people, not to serve the interests of the ruler, which concept was so prevalent in England. They also provided us the reason that they had taken on the formidable task of separating from England. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. They went on to explain the difficulty in coming to the point of separation with the explanation that prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Next, they explain the obligation that they impose upon the future should events demonstrate that the government has deviated from its proper purpose. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide for new guards for their future security. They then proceed with a list of grievances to reveal how the government of England has failed to serve the people, amongst which are: he has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance. He has obstructed the administration of justice. He has made judges dependent on his will alone. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and acknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts or pretended legislation. For protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. For imposing taxes upon us without our consent. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of a trial by jury, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for all of us in all cases whatsoever. Perhaps we can find some parallels here. State-enacted laws are superseded by federal enactments. Congress has established Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act courts. The independent judiciary on many levels has succumbed to administrative handouts funded by the federal government. The established bureaucracy, alphabet agencies, have become burdensome both on their imposition on our lives and the cost of their maintenance. Most every federal agency has been authorized to carry firearms, and some agencies have resorted to military equipment to conduct their investigative duties. Military forces have served in combat roles without declaration of war by the Congress and have been directed to serve under the command of foreign officers. Administrative agencies have provided rulemaking powers that are clearly imposed upon us outside of the protections of the Constitution. Federal and state law enforcement agencies have committed murder with impunity, including the murder of women and children and the burning of churches and homes. The government has arbitrarily determined that it can spend itself out of debt, that debt being imposed not only on us, but also on our posterity for many generations to come. They have denied us the fundamental right to jury nullification, which had been prevalent throughout our history. State laws and state initiatives have been made moot by federal agencies ignoring state law and punishing people who are acting totally within the laws of their respective states. Thoughts of the Founding Fathers. The thought process of the Founding Fathers was unconventional for the times. Monarchy was the form of government, with few exceptions, in Europe. Never before had such a group of people been in a situation where what was being cast off did not have a replacement in the wings. Political theory had abounded the centuries before the Revolution, but there had never been an opportunity to put such theory into practice. One of the major theorists was John Locke. Locke was one of the Enlightenment philosophers, venturing into ideological arenas seldom entered before by man. He challenged Sir Robert Filmer's Patriarcha, which had become the primary justification for the continuation of monarchical rule in Europe. Filmer explained the monarchy as rule by descendancy to the eldest son from Adam to the then-present monarch, who was George I, as the authority by which the sovereign right came. Locke argued to the contrary. He felt that man could establish government and govern, not rule, himself. The above-mentioned quotations on government contained in the Declaration of Independence are a paraphrase of portions of Locke's Second Treatise on Government. A more extensive presentation of Locke's theory will be included after some other considerations. This ends episode 1.